Material Wealth Personal Development Program. As you know, this show began by highlighting 54 weeks of support material that accompanied the book, the workbook, and the four DVDs. And now we talk to people from all different types of businesses, all different types of enterprises, for-profit and non-profit. And tonight we'll be talking to Shakria Akwal. And Shakria is the coordinator for the Inner City Interfaith Group here in Memphis, Tennessee. It's, and we'll be talking about that. She's an author and so forth, and I'll give you a little bit bigger, a little bit more detailed introduction to Shakria later. Remember that if you would like to ask a question of our guest or myself, then you dial 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. Press the 1 button on your touchtone dial, and that'll flag me to bring you in for your question. If you've got friends who are out of pocket, maybe not where they can get to this show on blogtalkradio.com/Renford, they can call that same number, 347-838-9142, and listen to the show. You can listen to it by phone, or you can listen to it at www.blogtalkradio.com/Renford. We'd like to invite you to go to the blog site, the home page, and there are at least five years of archives there. And so even after this show tonight, if there's something you missed, you want to go back and pick it up, you can do that. Or you can go back and find the first Laws of Material Wealth, Lesson 1 through Lesson 54, which are recorded there and archived there. So first we will do the Renford Revelation blog, which I've been doing regularly now for many months. The blogs are all available, Renford Revelation, by going to iam-cor.org/blog. Now, if you just go iam-cor.org, you'll be visiting the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics, where you can download free e-books, visit the bookstore, look at each one of the three degree levels of the Institute, see what the courses are, the texts are, something of the history of the Institute. You can do that. But if you just want to pick up on the blogs, when you get to iam-cor.org/blog, and you'll be able to go in and look at any of the blogs. Now, we've gotten a little bit out of sync on the blogs, and I noticed tonight that the one that's scheduled is actually needs to come in next week. So I'm going to share with you, you can call it a blog. It's actually a poem from my book, In Search of Self, The First Field of Knowledge. And this is a poem that I've had a lot of people ask about and in fact, publish in their books. This is called Impoverishment. There is no poverty like the poverty of man's vision, the deprivation of his inner light. There are no limits like the limits man places upon himself. God has placed none on him. There is no man so ignorant as the man who cannot see in everything the unity of all. There is no more deadly a disease of man, no spiritual cancer like the one called cynicism. There can be no greater emptiness than the absence of love. It's the worst kind of poverty. Poorer man than the man who cannot find within himself something to give. There's no man as lost as the man without proper perspective, a plan, focus, a purpose. There's no man as rootless as the man who cannot see his connectedness to all that exists. There's no man more fearful, more angry with the world than the man who refuses to learn. There's no man as shortchanged or foolish as the man who can only see life's injustices. There's no man so helpless as the man who refuses to know, choosing instead blind faith. There is no greater waste than the man who refuses to recognize his creative abilities. And finally, there's no man so doomed to failure as the man who only looks outward and not to himself. And that is the Renford Revelation. And we'll be back on track for the next one at the proper time. Now, let's get to my guest, Shukriya Akwal. Shukriya, I first came across with her book in our publishing company, I Am Press. She has a vegan cookbook. She spent a lot of time out in California. She now lives in Memphis. She's a herbalist, and works a lot with people in their cleansing themselves physically. And more recently, she has become coordinator and promoter for Inner City Inner Faith. And I had the opportunity to visit with one of these sessions where we had Islamic and Christian people talking about the same subject. That one was about marriage. And so we're going to talk to Shukriya a little bit about her career and about Inner City Inner Faith. Welcome to the show, Shukriya.
Thank you so much, Jim. I so totally enjoyed your intro. And out of all the things that you said, there is that poverty of a man's vision. It really struck me. So
yeah.
I certainly will be holding on to that one. But thank you again for having me on your show. And yes, I am in motion in terms of, you know, trying to promote peace among Christians and Muslims. Mm-hmm. It's an old adage, though. It's something that's been going on for eons. But I noticed that there wasn't anything from this level, at this caliber in Memphis, Tennessee. When I say this caliber, I mean just the fact that we are coming together, you know, different churches and different ministers and different imams and having a discussion and not a debate. So I think that's what makes it so unique.
Well, I've noted that there is a World Religion Day program here. I know Sachi Roy is the coordinator for that. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I've attended the Islamic-sponsored interfaith dinner, and where they have speakers from Jewish community,
yeah,
the Tibetan community, the Christian community, and so forth. Usually, it's quite a big affair, big dinner, and so forth. And
yeah,
I've always felt like that it's worthwhile, where people can have some understanding of others that they don't have any understanding of, because it's a whole lot more difficult to see them as enemies if you have some understanding and see how they are like you. But I'm not sure that has created the kind of dialogue that you are doing with Inner City Inner Faith. You're taking a single subject, you have multiple people from different religions talking about the same subject from their perspective, and that's some real dialogue there.
Well, I'm glad you came, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. It is an effort to create a sense of unity and likeness in the two faiths. The whole idea is to provide people with an understanding that Christians and Muslims are not enemies, and that the scriptures really complement each other a lot. We're starting small, but we are moving towards a higher goal so that more people, you know, can begin to understand Baghdad. There is unity among the two. Our next topic is coming up on November the 21st at Unity Church, and I thank you again for orchestrating that with Reverend Eric. Is it Eric Donaldson?
Donaldson.
Yeah. So that's going to be coming up real soon, and our topic will be the virgin birth. So we're going to look at similarities in terms of what Muslims think about the virgin birth and what Christians think about the virgin birth. And so I'm sure in that particular dialogue there will be some contention, but we're gonna work right through it. So I'm not nervous that you did.
There's a number of cases in the Hebrew and the Jewish text of virgin births. For instance, Sarah, and then of course the mother of John the Baptist and Mary around the time of the New Testament. But from the Hebrew text, there are also instances of it. In your dialogue, do you include Buddhist and Jewish and so forth, or is it basically between
open.
Christian and Muslim?
No, it's open. I'd be more than happy to include on the panelist a Buddhist or Hindu or any other faith. It's not exclusively a Christian Muslim, but it's been a little challenging to find someone that that will come up to the plate. But I'm very open to that.
You had about I believe 8 Christian ministers, different churches, and probably something comparable to that from the Islamic community there. So there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of dialogue. And I noted quite a bit of agreement on some of the things to do with marriage as well.
Oh yeah, it's really complementary. I think the only thing that Islam kind of varies away from Christianity is the fact that a man can literally have more than one wife in Islam. And even though they don't say it in Christianity, when you read the Bible, there are lots of there are lots of ways that God says that a man has more than one wife in the Christian faith. So I think
you see it a lot in the among the Hebrews, the Jewish people. I'm not sure that where you see too much talk of that in the New Testament.
No, I'm not really sure either. And you know, you're not talking to a theologist here. I'm just doing the work that I think I've been called to do. I feel like Moses sometimes. I'm being dragged into it, you know. But I do appreciate being able to help people understand the similarities. That's our approach, the similarities between the two faiths. So
now, how did you come to do this? I mean, you have a book, you teach and work with people herbalistically and for health reasons and so forth. At what point did you make this shift into developing inner city interfaith?
Well, I did live in California for a while, and that inception was around 1975, and I know I just dated myself. And I became involved in Islam. You know, Islam it has a lot of different facets. So I was indoctrinated into the Nation of Islam, if you will, with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And when he deceased, one of his sons, Warhuddin Muhammad, took over. And so I practiced with the American Muslim Mission for a long time. So that's, and I really got into practicing Islam, wearing the hijab, which is the head covering for the women, wearing all of the the garb and making the five prayers and just learning the Arabic language, just, you know, got really immersed into it because it was, I was in Northern California and it was just wide open. And then I moved back here, Memphis, Tennessee, which is my hometown, in 2005. And I got re-indoctrinated as an adult Christian. So, you know, I was born and raised a Christian. And then I went to Islam. And then now I'm back into my hometown, and I got re-indoctrinated into Christianity. I'm like, oh, wow. And so that's when I began to see the startling similarities in the two faiths. One of the things that came out in our last dialogue had to do with women, why do Muslim women cover? That was one of the topics that we addressed. And so I pulled somebody from the Christian faith, a woman from the Christian faith, to read across to come up with why do Christian women cover. So she did a very good presentation. So you could see in her quoting the Bible, Corinthians, and you could see that women in the Christian faith are supposed to cover a certain way. They're supposed to cover themselves, and then Muslims are supposed to cover. So it's just that similarity that people just can completely miss. That kept pulling me closer into doing this work. And you know how the spirit is, I think, that we all come to this planet, you know, for a reason. Sometimes we forget that because we have so many things distracting us, but we all come to the planet Earth for a particular reason. And I think that for me, one of the things that I've been called to do is to help people understand that, and it may be a small part, but it's nonetheless people are beginning to realize that there is a lot of similarities. Did that make sense? That I can clear up?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that the origins are the very very similar, and both Islam and Jews claim Abraham as their father,
mm-hmm.
and they have different roles. Of course, Ishmael being the son, the father of the Arab nation, and Isaac of the Jewish nation. But it's there's so many similarities because of their coming from that same root. I find it fascinating that the only woman mentioned in the Quran is Mary, Mother of Jesus, 36 times. That's pretty amazing stuff. So, and that Muhammad himself did not see himself and Islam as an enemy of the Jews, and even as an enemy of the Christians. But this is something that developed with his followers later on, the caliphs and so forth, where
the first
battles became so great.
Yes, exactly. That persecution was what made the difference in how the perception developed between Christians and Muslims being even enemies, you know.
The Crusades and all the rest of it exacerbated it too.
Yeah, and it clearly states that Christians and Muslims are not enemies; that they are to know each other and you know, not to despise each other. I mean, as long as we don't say anything about it, you know, as long as we're not trying to promote a sense of peace and unity and getting to know each other and talking about our similarities and some of the differences and accepting differences, then that's the way. I know it's a lot of stuff online now on YouTube about Islam that's just not true. I mean, just in terms of how this particular surah, ayat, that talks about men beating their, having the right to beat their women, you know, it's like, I mean, that's taken way out of context, you know. So it's things like that that we end up having to have a discussion about so that it puts that fire out, you know, because at one point, especially after 9/11, 9/11, the Muslims were just atrociously persecuted, you know. And the children, the children here in this country were, they were in school and they were being taunted by other children. You know, it was a horrifying experience. So I think that we really have to be careful and make sure that we are trying to understand the similarities in the two faiths.
Where do you think that this came from, the sharp division and the besides what happened on 9/11, but I mean, down through the years, in the more recent years, not going back all the way to the grandson of Muhammad and Ali and him being killed, and then you have the division between the Sunnis and the Shias, and that's been going on for 1,500 plus years and all of that. But what about now? What's the is there a major attempt to have understanding between these religions, or are the leaders of both sides exacerbating the problem?
I think that's probably the case. The leaders from both sides are exacerbating, and I think that it's a little bit too political for me to really, really expound on it, but we're looking at oil in the Middle East that's, you know, coming, that's being, administered here. We're looking at so many goods and services that are coming from the Middle East that America needs, you know. So it's kind of political to make Islam look like the Buddha bear or the bad guy, you know, so that it gives America the right to go over and do whatever they need to do to, you know, to those countries. It's like even when you put a spotlight on the Sharia, this is a Muslim law, you know, they try to make it seem like the Sharia is the worst thing in the world, when it is a coalition of laws that help to actually guide and govern who we are as human beings. It's a structure that's far more in depth than democracy. So it's really a political move, I think, to keep people thinking that Islam is the worst religion in the world, so that America can keep their hands in the pie or the pot. That's kind of like in a nutshell how I see it.
Well, the Sharia law was something that was stressed by a man named Wahhabi or Wahhab, and mm-hmm. the Saudi royal family are all Wahhabis. They follow that particular sect, and the Sunnis and the Shias that I mentioned earlier mm-hmm. are a different kettle of fish. Those two have been fighting ever since because the Shias believe that Ali was murdered and he was should have been the rightful heir to Muhammad, and the Sunnis thought mm-hmm. that they ought to be elected and so forth. So you had this kind of fighting going on, but the Wahhabis, the creation. I lived in Saudi Arabia. I lived in Bahrain. I traveled to all the GCC countries. I lived in. I traveled to Qatar, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Sharjah, Oman, all of those countries with my job. I was out there from 1980 to 83.
Wow.
And became familiar with the, but I did note that there certainly was no freedom of religion. I mean, basically, you could be a Shia, you could be a Sunni, you could be a Wahhabi, but you weren't a Christian. There were no churches, no synagogues or anything like that. I mean, people could do a little something if they wanted to in their homes, but there is nothing comparable to the United States, where everybody and his dog has his own religion. You can have so
many. That might be a feather in America's cap, you know, to be open enough to have everybody worship in the way that they, you know, have the freedom of worship.
And you see a lot of growth in mosque and worship Islamic developments here in Memphis. I know from 3 or 4 that I know of or I'm familiar with that they've expanded and they appear to be growing. And the interfaith dinner has become really quite an event, including the mayors and the ministers from many different churches and Buddhists and everything else. It's become quite an event once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's there's no, I don't see any attempt to prohibit or restrict, you know, the growth of Islam in the United States, and I think it is growing quite rapidly. And there, of course, different versions of it here too.
Yeah, I agree. And even if there were a chance to, you know, to stop it or block it, it's not working. It is what it is. It is growing. It's almost like people are looking for something, you know, something different.
Now, where do you take this from here? With the you're choosing fairly, you know, kind of a common type of subject matter that people have a lot of opinions about, and so from both sides you get that. But where do you see inner city interfaith going from here?
Well, I'd like to see what I saw when I was in California last year, which is I went to Pasadena to visit my sister, and they're very big on interfaith. And one of the things that I saw was that the Christians came in twice a month to the mosque and worked with them. They came in during Ramadan and, you know, served them. You know, so it, that kind of camaraderie, that kind of, you know, energy and how do you say, just making sure that we understand how important it is to work with each other in doing things. So I can see that being a larger picture. The other thing is our children, our youth need to be, you know, more interactive as it relates to being, you know, interfaith and dialoguing with each other on this. So I see hopefully in the future children coming together and having their own panel discussion about the religion, you know, because I'm really big on religion. I just believe that it's a realignment of the spirit and the soul to help you get back to the source that you were, you know, how do you say, with before you were, you know, how do you say, lodged in your mom's womb. You know, we were a soul, spirit soul then. So you can tell by the misdirection that everybody is experiencing now that we need a little bit of a direction when you really delve into religion and how it's supposed to reenact us. It redirects us. So I do see us working together, doing more work, physical work together, like some of the programs that they have in Masjid Amuk Minun. They, you know, the food pantry and some other programs. We invite the Christians in to come in and help, because when I go to the masjid, they're always asking for help, you know, to do this and help to do that. And then the same thing with the church. When I go to the church, they're always asking for more participation. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an expansion. Yeah.
What would you recommend for people who want to know about this, more who want to understand more about Islam, and about the interfaith activities in Memphis, where would they go online to get more information?
Well, we do not have our website set up yet. So I would just have to leave my phone number. You know, I don't know if that might be a direction, but that's what I have.
Well, email and phone number if they want to talk to you. I think that the interfaith group, I think if you Googled Interfaith Memphis, you would probably come up with a lot of stuff anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure, because that's a good idea. Just Google it.
But now, what is your, if you are fielding questions at your email site, what is it?
It's my first name. I'll have to spell it out. SHUKRIYYAH. And the last part of that is BARBOE@yahoo.com. So I'm
Say,
more
what
than
was
happy
the last part after your name?
BARB as in boy, OE, at Yahoo.
As in Darbo.
Yes, that's it exactly.
Darbo. Okay, and then do you take phone calls as well?
I do. Uh-huh. I'm at 901-503-9488. That's 901-503-9488.
Now, you are an author. You've written
I'm
a book on vegan. It's a vegan cookbook, right?
Soulful Southern Vegetarian Approach to Eating. Country Eating Without the Fat is what I'm coining it. It's food that we're accustomed to eating, but it's not fattening. It's vegetarian. It's plant-based, even down to the banana pudding with no white sugar. So, you know, and I have cookbooks here, and people want to, you know, I do cooking classes here in the house, and I'm partnering, doing some work with two vegan sisters, too, out in Bartlett.
Yeah, now two vegan sisters are located just off of Summer Avenue. In fact, Bretta has been on, I think she was on Core Concepts, and used to be down close to UT, University of Tennessee down off of, I guess that's Union. But now they're, I don't know what the cross street is. Do you have the address for them on off of Summer?
I think it's 3920. I believe it's National Street or 3920 National.
Well, you can Google two vegan sisters, and I'm sure get information on it. They actually put together dinner packages and supply people with all their meals, or at least a meal a day, or something like that. And if you haven't tried anything like that, it would be worth going out and having a vegan meal. Now, what do you do with them? Are you providing some recipes?
Yeah, I'm supplying them with some desserts, the vegan banana pudding, and also we're planning to do some holiday cooking classes coming up in November the 18th. That's on a Saturday, starting at 4 p.m. So we're going to be doing tofu and dressing with greens and cornbread.
Sounds good.
It will be very good. And an interesting change, too.
Jumping back, we were talking about that date. You can repeat that date, but also give us the date and locality of the next inner city interfaith get together.
Okay, the next date is the 21st at Unity Church, and it starts at 4 o'clock, and we'll be in there until about 5:30. And they are located at 3345 McCorkle Road, Memphis, Tennessee. And our topic will be the virgin birth. So we're looking forward.
McCorkle Road is a little street that runs from Brooks Road. If you come down on 240 and you're going like you're going 55 south toward Jackson, that direction, you get off like you're going to Elvis Presley Boulevard there, but you bear right and you'll be running west on Brooks Road. There are two main traffic lights there. The second one is Lakeview Road, and
mm-hmm.
McCorkle Road is just a little bit past that. It tees into Brooks Road. You turn left there on McCorkle Road, and the church is located on a hill about halfway up to Winchester. So
yep.
Winchester and Brooks Road are running parallel there, and McCorkle is a connector road. And you say the date for that is when?
That's November the 21st.
You say November the 21st?
Uh-huh, November 21st.
Yeah.
That's on a Saturday from 4 until 5:30.
Now, I guess people can come and go as they like, so it does run, it might run a little longer if people want to talk, right?
Yeah, and we do Q&As, so it might run a little longer, but most definitely stop through and be a part of unity between Christians and Muslims. That's just the simple bottom line. Yeah.
So that's the date on that one, and let's repeat the date on the cooking class at Two Vegan Sisters.
That's November the 14th. So that's a Saturday as well. That's a Saturday before the dialogue. So November the 14th, we're going to do a southern approach to preparing a vegetarian dressing. And we're going to have just a whole gamut, the greens with yams. We're going to prepare it all from a vegan perspective.
Hmm.
And then instead of using turkey, we're going to use tofu.
Okay.
So exciting. Yeah.
Now, because of the being involved with the doing the cookbook and being involved in cooking like that, did you become an herbalist before then or after?
Actually, I became an herbalist through my lineage. My great grandmother was pure Cherokee, and she was an herbalist. Of course, they didn't call them that then; they just call them roots. But anyway, I got more savvy with it, or you know, a little more into it as I experimented with it. Once I found out that she was an herbalist, I experimented a little bit more with it and saved people's lives literally. And so I was living on the coast then, and then I was able to go to some classes to get certified as an herbalist. And at the same time, I was still practicing herbology. So that's my mainstay now. I'm moving out of education. I'm also teaching with Shelby County Schools. So moving out of education into my own private practice as an herbalist. And what I do is I help people with a six-week, I call it a systems cleanse, because we have 11 systems that govern our bodies, govern who we are. So it's really crucial to understand them and to learn how to keep them clean, just like you would your car or anything else, your house. This is a temple of the Holy Spirit, so we have to learn how to keep it clean, and then we won't be plagued with so many diseases. They call it disease when you put the word together, but So
could you describe these, did you say 11 systems or 12 systems?
11.
Can you describe them a little bit for the listeners?
There's a respiratory system, and it controls, our lungs and our breathing apparatuses. And then there's the one that controls all of our senses, the sensory system. I'll just use a plain word, sensory system. And then we have the gastrointestinal tract. That's a whole nother system, and that controls our food being redistributed into the body. And we've got a circulatory system. That's our heart pumping, and we just got a lot going on. And when we don't know, our systems and know anything very little about our bodies and how they operate, that's where we run into problems. That's where we run into these so-called illnesses, all the way down to the most dangerous one, which is cancer. And cancer is simply dirt. That's all it is. It's just one part of your body that has gotten really, really dirty, and it can't throw off the old toxic material. And so it, it breaks down, and it just starts to rot. And then, they'll go in and put chemotherapy on you or whatever else, when all you really need is the cleanse.
And that just adds to the problem.
Most definitely. Yeah, most
now,
definitely.
Now, you're not proposing a cleansing system that cleanses everything. You were suggesting that you have to clean one system at a time.
No, actually, I'm suggesting that if you're going to do a cleanse, first of all, you need to work with someone who knows how to do it. I believe Ezekiel 47:12 says that we should use the plants as medicine. So when you think about that word medicine, it brings up a whole gamut of ideas around prescriptions and times and all that. Well, there are plants that won't grow in certain seasons, obviously. So you really need to be working with somebody who knows how to manipulate the body. In other words, you wouldn't want to go in and just start cleansing your lymphatic system, and you haven't opened up you haven't cleaned your kidney or your bladder or your spleen or even your colon, which is the most important organ that we have, is the colon, because it's so long, and because of the nature of what it does, which is it breaks our food down and it holds the feces and it dumps out. So if that's
wouldn't that be the first thing that you would do is a toxic cleaning, or the colon would be the first thing?
It'd be the first thing. You'd have to be, because the other waste has to dump through that, and the urinary system. Yeah, so you just have to know. I know a lot of people are running into some challenges now because they're online and they're saying, well, I'm on this cleanse and I'm on that cleanse, or I got this herb and I got that herb. Danger. Don't try to do it all on your own. You have to know what you're doing. So, again, that's one of my specialties. I do coach people. I call myself an herbal coach. I do coach people through system cleanses. And
so it's the process of getting rid of the waste that's most important to do first. Otherwise, it would just get more clogged up when you do other cleansing you do, processing through a clogged up system. You could actually make yourself pretty sick.
You could make yourself, you could. And then when you think that you're finished cleansing, and you start to, one of the things that I offer within that 6-week span is some cooking classes and a trip to the health food store, because you don't want to clean out and then go back and start eating the same thing that you were eating.
Which is the biggest problem with people and their diets and fad diets, whether it's a good diet or not. If once you've lost the 10 or 15 or 20 pounds or 30 pounds you're trying to lose, you go back to your old habits, then those pounds go right back on.
Exactly.
And maybe even more difficult. And that would apply to your stuff too, wouldn't it?
That's the point. That's the point, because you in my system, you learn how to prepare the food. And I hate using the word cook, because you don't have to cook the food. You can just prepare it. It's, you know, it's pretty much, it's all plant-based, so.
How much of what you do is raw food?
I don't do very much raw food, but I do lightly steam. When I say lightly,
steam.
I mean just, yeah, I just mean like maybe 2 or 3 minutes in boiling water. I would put some cauliflower, broccoli, and carrots, and then just turn it off and let the water, you know, continue to cook through the skin a little bit, because that's where the nutrients lie. You have to, you don't have to, but it's good if you can break this, you know, break the skin just a little bit, so that when you start chewing your food, you can just absorb all the minerals and nutrients that's just right there waiting, because you have put a little bit of hot water on them. So I don't do a lot of raw, even though I encourage it. There's another brother in this area that I work with. When I get finished with my clients, if people want to, if they want to go further and just go on into raw food, I send them right to Brother Balewa. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
He had a vegan restaurant.
Now
he's the juice person. He's the raw person. So we, you know, and now that two sisters, they do vegan food as well, raw foods as well, juices. So I send them places where they can, you know, go further with it, go to the next level. But our people seem to have a lot of problems with taste and textures. And that's one of the things that I provide. You know, it's like, okay, this tastes like something I'm used to, the crispy barbecue tofu with greens and cornbread. And then they can stick with it for a while, you know, for long enough to be able to, you know, to clean their systems out and get used to eating something different. So that's
now, what about, I mean, you're talking about herbs. You're talking about diet, and I'm assuming you're talking about drinking alkaline water, because disease can't live in an alkaline body. It has to have it lives in acidic bodies, and most of us have acidic bodies. But do you also work with them on physical cleansing, as in colonics?
I am. I'm glad you brought that up, because I am a certified colon therapist as well. I don't have a machine, but I do definitely, I can walk people through a cleansing of the colon using water very easily with a Walgreens enema bag. You can do that very, very easily. And I think that's something that we've abandoned. I know when I was a little girl, you used to see them just hanging behind the door, you know, and people just use them regularly. But we've abandoned that as well. But yeah, hydrotherapy is a mainstay, especially among the stars. I'll put it like that: Oprah and President Obama, and you have to go on and on. Everybody is into getting their colon cleaned with water, and there are a few people in this area that you know, that are set up to do it, and they do excellent jobs. I know Dr. Bowden.
We've seen ads of Dr. Bowden's. There was a time that people went to Mississippi for colonics because Tennessee had a law against it unless it's doctor prescribed.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that ban still exists, but there are some people around Jackson that are doing them, and they're very successful at it. So I think the ban may be lifting a little bit, you know. It was the same way when I started doing them in California with Dr. Elizabeth Moyer, who was a chiropractor and died at the age of 105 years old. She trained me, and then during that time, the early 90s and early 80s, I'm sorry, late 80s and early 90s, there was a ban. We had to really fight the medical professionals hard just to be able to do colonics, you know, because they, and you know, I guess the knowledge level, intrinsic level, intuitive level, they know that it's a healing process. I said, well, you will get rid of your disease in your body if you start doing colon cleanses. And that's just... Mm-hmm.
And then doing the herbal as well.
Yeah,
and then watching what you're eating.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a combination. So this is something that you more or less inherited from your grandmother and then continued on with studies like with the doctor you just mentioned that lived to be 105.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of that came the cookbook. And you say you have some copies of that available?
Yes, thanks to you, Jim.
If they want to get a copy, do they call the same number?
Yes. Again, I'm still in the dark ages here, so they need to call me, and most definitely I'll either send it to them or come and get it.
Give your email and phone number again.
My phone number is 901-503-9488, and my email address is my first name, Shukriya, Shukri, YYAH. The last part of that would be DARBOE at Yahoo. That's Darbo. DARBOE. Yeah.
Now you're still working with the Memphis City Schools. You have this career that in health that has come down to you from your grandmother, and now you are working seriously with the development of inner city, inner faith. What happens next?
Gee whiz. Well, you know what? I have, my spirit troubles me daily about young African American boys. There's so much research that shows that, you know, if they don't learn how to read before third grade, they're just going to sink into nothingness. And so where I'm headed now with that is I would like to start an entrepreneurial program just to teach them how to do for self. So that's my next baby. And it ties perfectly into the interfaith group because they will be selling to the people in churches. I think you left before I introduced them, but I have about 5 or 6 young men between the ages of 5 and 11 years old. And it's a youth entrepreneur group. And basically what we do is I order things from a teacher supply store at a reasonable rate. And then I set up an appointment with one of the congregations, like Unity Church, and I take my boys over there, and when church is over, we set up our tables, and they sell their things, and they get to keep the money. So it's a program for them, and it's involved. There's math. They have to learn the math. So we're now at Liberation Community Church, which is where we had the interfaith group that you came to. That's where we housed for the young men. I meet them over there once or twice a month and go over some math skills with them, you know, adding, subtraction, just basic things. So it's budding.
Well, we want to hear more about that. If you could get more information about what you're doing with them, because it's certainly, I wouldn't like to use the term endangered species, but they do face a lot of problems. Young black men, and there are a number of community-oriented programs that I've come across that, in fact, one of them brought Trayvon Martin's mother up here to Memphis, and that was held at Unity Christian as well. And
wow.
some very interesting programs, and a lot of people are conscious of the problem now. So I expect to see more things happening along development lines there. Not giving anything, but educating, giving something. But I mean, not just passing out things, but actually teaching and helping develop programs.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for being with us and talking about inner city, inner faith, about health issues and your cleansing programs and this program. And I want you to come back and be with us again a little later on when you can kind of report progress.
Okay.
Here.
Love to.
And so thank you again for being with us this evening.
And thank you so much. And thank you, listening audience. Thank you.
We would like to make sure and invite you to visit the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics by going to iam-cor.org. That's iam-cor.org. You can view the 3 degree levels of the school. You can see what courses are taught, what texts are used. There are 3 free ebooks there. You can go up and download one called The Searcher's Roadmap, one called The Core Document, and one called The Unity Principles. These are free ebooks that you can download. We also have a prototype of our electronic magazine, E-Zine, we call Lightways. You can download that. We're working toward developing a regular scheduled issuance of Lightways. And I want to invite you to go to youtube.com and type in Renford Broadcast Network. That's R-E-N-F-O-R-D, Renford Broadcast Network. There are 6 sections on this site, and the first is the Laws of Material Wealth, the first of the Laws of Material Wealth DVD, so you can get some sense of what this personal development program is about. This is, I feel like, the most comprehensive personal development program available anywhere, bar none, because you have all 13 universal principles are covered, the interaction and the connection. We don't tell you to go look at the law of attraction. That's like giving you a 13-piece puzzle and keeping back 12 pieces. You need to know all 13 of the principles and the interconnection of those. The Laws of Material Wealth DVD, There are 4 DVDs, but you can get some sense of the program from that DVD. And, of course, with that comes the book, the workbook, and the 54 lessons. Also want to invite you to go back here to Radio by Renford, the RBR network. And we have 11 hosts, 11 shows per week, different genres. Cruise through and view some of those programs and check the times when they are on. We have a host in New York, one in Boston, one in Seattle, and one in Denver, Little Rock, and the others are in the Memphis area. So thank you very much for being with us and talking with Shukriya Akwal, and join us again next week for the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Have a good evening, everyone.